Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, stop counting carbs and fat grams, and start getting on with your life. How about that? Wouldn't it be great to wake up and just think about how you're going to make your day great instead of what are you going to eat today? How are you going to be good in terms of eating or not eating? I want to liberate you from all that. In fact, yesterday I talked with a diet junkie. You can find her on Instagram at Diet Junkie, J-U-N-K-E. She's really awesome, and I'm going to let you guys know when that interview is up. But we talked all about willpower. And why willpower just is not a good thing, because it keeps you from yourself. Wouldn't it be nice, rather than, again, waking up and saying, I'm going to be good today, I am not going to eat this, I am going to eat that, I'm going to use my willpower, I'm going to tell myself I'm going to be good, I'm going to make myself be good. Rather than wake up every day and do that, wake up and think, you know, Do I want to eat that or not? And not have it be a battle all day. And that's something that is so liberating. And when you really look at what is eating at you, instead of focusing on what you are eating, you're going to get that kind of liberation too. You're going to have that peace of mind. You're not going to be obsessing about food all the time. You're going to be free. That is my mission, to help people liberate themselves from all that. I did it for myself. I do it for my patients. I can do it for you. So if you would like to join me, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what is on your mind. So last week, I started sharing some tips on how to process emotions. I've given you some ways that I help people process emotions, but I decided to let Deepak Chopra weigh in, so to speak. And I'm going to get to those in a little bit, but first, I want to share an article, because this article was forwarded to me by multiple people. No, I can't remember the last time so many people shared an article with me. So I figured I'm going to share it with you guys. It is called The Big Diet This Year Could Be No Diet at All. And it was written for a Canadian paper called The Globe and Mail. So thank you, all you Canadian people who sent me this article. And now everyone out there, I'm going to share it with you. So the premise of the article is, what if instead of promising to go on a diet this year, your resolution is to go on a non-diet? And that is what Angela Yazbek did 2 years ago. She said she's never been happier or healthier. She's a yoga teacher and former CBC producer in Toronto, who started following intuitive eating principles after years of limiting food, obsessing about food. You know how that goes, right? So instead of skipping meals, she now happily eats 3 meals a day, according to her cravings, and as much or as little as she wants. So intuitive eating, what is intuitive eating? It isn't a plan, it isn't a diet. Instead, it's a way of approaching food that is so simple, should be obvious, but it's eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, and eating as much as you want when you want it. And it sounds really radical and it sounds impossible when I talk about this with my patients. And again, I don't talk a lot about food, but sometimes we do. They say, well, if I listen to myself, I would just eat a whole pizza. And that's not what I'm talking about. It's about, instead of following a diet which is external to you, you know, you should eat this, you shouldn't eat that, tune in to what your body needs. And what your body needs is not just all super healthy food all the time. I mean, it is okay to once in a while have something that's not super healthy. So And, you know, it is not a new concept. Dietitians have been promoting this way of eating since 1995, 26 years ago, but the approach has recently started to gain momentum online in an environment chock full of messaging that promotes restrictive eating. And by the way, guys, restrictive eating, otherwise known as dieting, just sets you up for binging, because all restriction is about deprivation. And deprivation, the experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation, will make you want more. So if you're thinking, I shouldn't have, I'll just use pizza again, I shouldn't have pizza, then what are you going to want more than anything? Pizza. And then when you have it, instead of saying, well, that slice or two of pizza was really good, you're going to say, oh, I shouldn't have had that. Shouldn't have had that pizza. So I've blown my day, so I might as well have the rest of the pizza. That's how it goes. That's what restrictive eating does, and that's why it is not a good thing. Okay, so the article goes on to say there is no shortage of Instagram accounts plugging clean eating. What the hell is clean eating? I mean, is it washing your vegetables before you eat them? What is clean eating? Or trendy diets such as keto. And some so-called experts promote the idea that thinness, goodness, and avoiding certain food groups such as grains or dairy are all intertwined. This is so true. The fact that the notion that your sense of self, like you're somehow a superior person if you can say no to dairy or no to dessert, that somehow your character is elevated by the ability to deprive yourself. This is nonsense. You are not a good moral person because you can say no to chips or ice cream or whatever it is you think is dirty food. What makes you a good person is not your ability to restrict foods. What makes you a good person is the way that you are to others, the way you are in the world, and the way you are to yourself. You know, you got to be good to yourself too, and that is the key. So advocates of intuitive eating say that these ideas about clean eating and dieting and thinness, goodness, and all of that stuff, nonsense, says that it drives people away from listening to their bodies, so true, and that an obsession with thinness has resulted in a constant anxiety of never being good enough. And isn't that the truth? Like you think, oh, if I get to this weight, then I'm going to be good enough. Because there's this fantasy, there's this illusion that if you get to whatever weight you want to get to, that somehow you're going to be a better you. And this is what people tell me all the time. Oh, you know, when I get to this weight, I'm going to be more outgoing. I'm going to have more friends. What power losing weight has, right? You lose weight and you get more friends, you get more confident, you get happier. That's the illusion, and that's why it's hard to give up. The truth is, you lose weight, you get to a number, and you still feel the same. You still feel the same. Maybe you feel temporarily like, okay, good, you reached your goal, you can go to the store and buy whatever you want, you look good in clothes, that feels good. But guess what? That does not last. And then you just feel like yourself again. Losing weight will not change you. Losing weight will only change the number on the scale and the size of your clothes. That's it. But why do we, are we constantly getting these messages about diets and, you know, better body, better you is what it all kind of comes down to? Because the diet and fitness industry generates $60 billion a year, $60 billion with a B, $60 billion. And so it is incentivizing people to stay on diets. Because if people all of a sudden said, oh, wait a minute, I don't need a diet. I just need to tune in to myself, treat myself better, be kinder to myself, recognize what I'm feeling, respond to myself differently, be encouraging instead of discouraging, then I won't use food to cope, I won't stress eat, I won't binge at night, I'm good. You know, then the fitness and diet industry loses $60 billion a year, so they don't want you to know the secret, the true secret to change, which is what I'm giving you right now. You want to lose weight, you got to lose that internal critic. You got to lose your inhibitions about feeling certain feelings or conflicts. You got to get more supportive of yourself. So intuitive eating, and I love this, aims to take the morality and shame out of eating. Isn't that that intuitive eating? And my philosophy aims to take the morality and shame out of eating and put the spotlight on, here's a radical thought, enjoying food. Thin people are not morally superior, and either is eating a kale salad, says Alyssa Rumsey, a registered dietitian in New York City. She runs a private practice as well as online coaching. That's Alyssa, R-U-M-S-E-Y. In our diet and clean eating obsessed world, these ideas are often met with skepticism, as if eating what you want is the most unnatural and preposterous thing to do ever. The only way to make peace with food and your body, even if you don't achieve like some size zero look, which not everybody can, not everybody should, is to stop obsessing about food and learn to enjoy it. And that means all food, vegetables, and the occasional junk food. So what this dietitian and what intuitive eating proponents and what I advise is to tune into your body's health cues. So, you know what's healthier than kale, says this dietitian? A good relationship with food. That is healthier than eating kale. Self-control, she says, I have to eat vegetables at every meal to be healthy. That's self-control versus self-care. Vegetables give me the nutrients my body needs. So one is kind of a slave-driving philosophy, which, when you're slave-driving yourself, you will eat clean, you will eat vegetables, you will not eat that. You're bad because you ate that. You're good because you didn't eat that. You know, that is not conducive to feeling good about yourself. That is not conducive to self-esteem. And you need self-esteem to have a good, balanced relationship with yourself. When you have that, when you can encourage yourself, support yourself, be there for yourself the way perhaps you are for other people, then you don't need food for that purpose. You don't need food to escape, to comfort, to numb, to distract. You don't need to displace your anger, for instance, towards other people onto yourself. I'm not mad at my, wife or husband. I'm mad at myself. Bagels, that's what I'm mad at. This is what I hear a lot. People, they transfer their anger that really belongs towards some people or situations, and they deny that they're mad, or they tell themselves, I shouldn't be mad. They try to push down that anger, and then they eat something quote-unquote bad, and they get mad at themselves, therefore taking the anger that really belongs to other people and situations, taking that anger and putting it on themselves. And then when you're mad at yourself, you feel bad. What do you do eventually to feel better? Eat some comfort food. And that's why it is such a vicious cycle. So Rumsey says, most people's first reaction to the idea of eating whatever they want is shock. They worry that they would gorge on forbidden foods, never eat anything healthy, and gain loads of weight. But eventually, people ditch the potato chips and eat healthy food because they realize they feel better when they eat vegetables. They feel better. And I hear this all the time in my practice. People will say, when it's no longer forbidden and they're not eating it out of some kind of stress, emotion, something psychological going on, then they taste it. And sometimes they say, it really wasn't that good. Like I wanted a donut and I shouldn't have donuts. And I hated donut. And then I ate three more donuts because, I'm not supposed to eat donuts. Usually those donuts are barely ever tasted. Right, they're just, you're feeling guilty, you can't stop, it's horrible. But when you give yourself permission to have a donut, you can have a bite of donut and say, is this donut good? And sometimes it isn't. And people are very surprised. Like, oh, I didn't even realize I didn't like that cake that much. Or I didn't like whatever it was that previously they would have binged on. When you feel better, you're more drawn to those kinds of healthy foods. So intuitive eating has given, who did I talk about in the beginning? What's her name? The yoga teacher. Has given the yoga teacher a new sense of peace with food and with herself. She spent years, but you can relate to this, you guys. She spent years worrying about every morsel that went into her mouth, trying all the trendy diets, working out constantly in an effort to achieve what she considered the quote-unquote perfect body. And she got a lot of social approval for being thin, despite the cost to her sanity and her time. These days, she eats more food than she used to, but she spends a lot less time thinking about food. She enjoys her life more, and she says, the stress and panic that I felt at every meal is gone. Another dietitian, author of the How to Eat blog, How to Eat, she came to intuitive eating after watching her daughter choose her own foods naturally and realized that the inch was a healthier option for kids and for adults. And she just wants people to relax about food, accept food is just food without any moral value. And she understands, we have to understand, it is a process and you might need some psychological support from a specialist or a therapist. That's what I'm here to do. So if you have any questions about what I'm talking about, if you have any concerns or if this is intriguing to you, the idea of intuitive eating, give me a call, 602-818-602-4929. Love to hear from you. So intuitive eating is based on the 10 principles set out in the book Intuitive Eating, a Revolutionary Program That Works, by dietitians Evelyn Tribble and Elise Rush, whose most recent edition was published in 2009. But believe me, it's 10 years old, but it's just as valid now as it was then. So these principles include rejecting the diet mentality, honoring your hunger, respecting your fullness, and honoring your health. By the way, Elise Rush is coming out with a new book in a couple of months, and hopefully she'll be coming on the show to talk about it. Weirdly, so I did 23andMe, and you know when you do 23andMe and those that you can meet your genetic relatives, weirdly enough, we have like 0.3% genetic compatibility. Like she's my, you know, eighth distant cousin or something like that. So I reached out to her and I said, aren't you the same person who wrote Intuitive Eating? So we connected and I'm hoping to have her on the show to talk about her new book. She and Evelyn wrote the original book because they were frustrated with the constant focus on weight management and dieting that is often part of the dietitian field. Restrictive dieting, all dieting, sets people up to fail. And this is so important, it encourages a disconnect between your body and food. One of the things that they say, and I really want to share this with you, is you're not the failure. You haven't failed at dieting. Dieting has failed you. Okay? You haven't failed at dieting. Dieting has failed you. The science shows that restricting food naturally leads to binging. Again, not about willpower, not about a moral failure. They say there should not be any morality on food. If you killed the farmer to get the food, then you are breaking a moral code. Otherwise, give yourself permission to eat what you want. That's pretty funny. Okay, now, counter opinion. Not all experts agree. Dr. Yanni Friedhoff, who's a medical director of a behavioral weight management program in Ottawa, Canada, says food is not intuitive. I wish it was. He says in our current food culture, it's impossible to be a true intuitive eater. I'm sorry, I'm going to get more to what he's talking about, but that's not true. It's just not true. I've talked a lot about how with my daughters, I would say if they said they were hungry, I would say, well, you want an orange, you want an apple, you want a piece of cheese, you want some cookies, as if they all had equal value. And sometimes, actually, not very often, my girls would say, I want some cookies or I want some ice cream. Most of the time it was, I want some hummus, I want an orange, I want something, I want real food, basically. So I disagree. I think that what he's gonna about to talk about has to do with our brains. But remember, we are more than brains. We also have minds. And our minds are instrumental, the way we think. Our unconscious minds as well as our conscious minds, the way we think has a way of balancing or overriding our brains. Oh, okay, this is an 800 number, so let's see what happens. Hi, you're on with Dr. Nina. Hello? I don't have audio. And I think that was a wrong number. I don't know why an 800 number would be calling a radio show, but whoop, they're not calling anymore. Okay, so let's get back to Dr. Yanni Friedhoff. He says, the goal of processed food is to make people eat more and more, which is true. Intuition is likely to fail when it comes to the hypercaloric and ultra-processed foods that are all around us. Processed food is engineered for us to want more of it. This is true. And that overrides whatever intuition we feel about it. This is where I disagree, because that's where your mind comes in. When you're saying, am I wanting to eat this processed food because I'm just, my brain is just addicted to it and I can't stop and I want to mindlessly eat it? It may feel like that. Or is there a part of my mind that says, if I eat that processed food, I'm going to feel better, and I want to feel better, so I'm going to eat it. But if I can make myself feel better in a different way, then that hyper-processed food is not going to taste so good anymore. Friedhoff takes particular issue with the most radical part of intuitive eating, that a person's weight is not important. I agree with this. It's not that weight is not important. I don't think they're saying that a person's weight is not important, but let's see what he says. The science shows that excess weight negatively affects the quality of health. And again, this is very controversial, and that people can safely lose 10 to 15% of their weight and have improved quality of life. He has no issues with people who restrict their diets to the degree. He says, I'm an egalitarian. If you're meeting your nutritional needs and you like the way you're living, that's good. But he does say people should lead the healthiest life they can enjoy, and that means different things to different people. People who choose to eat intuitively may find their weight goes up, especially if they weren't eating enough calories or were banning a lot of foods before they changed their diets. That's called refeeding. Often people who are super restrictors, their bodies are so afraid of not having enough calories that their bodies grab the calories, and sometimes they gain weight before then they lose weight and get to their set point. But that's generally, I find in my experience, for people who are really underweight and restricting to a high degree. And Rumsey says the first few months of intuitive eating can be rocky for some people, but after the adjustment period, they reach their natural set point, which can be higher or lower than they expected. So the peace that intuitive eating has given the yoga teacher has opened up time for prioritizing more things, such as her family, her friends, and her kids. The fact that she no longer spends hours planning her meals, panicking about what she's going to eat, or searching for snacks that fit whatever restrictive diet she was in, make it all worth it. And the joy she finds in listening to and nourishing her body has infused her entire life. She says, I honestly feel lighter now. So what are your thoughts about this? give me a call at 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Tell me what you think of this article. Share whatever is going on with you, whatever is eating at you, whatever is weighing on you. Because often we turn to food because something is bothering us and we don't know another way of handling that. Or we turn to food because we're so restrictive. In the past, you've heard my frequent caller, Nicole. She messaged me that she got a job that makes it so she may not be able to call in. So we may not hear from Nicole for a while. But if you've listened to the show before, a lot of times she will say things like, you know, I don't know why I ate that. And it turns out she was so restrictive, or she was eating such sort of bland, yucky foods that when she ate something that was tasty, she couldn't stop. And that happens with a lot of people. But often it is emotional. So, okay. So now, let's see what time we are. Oh, we have lots of time. Guys, call me. I want to talk to you. I want to know what's happening. What's happening with you? How can I help? I am here to help. You have me at your disposal. Call me. 818-602-4929. Okay. So let's get to Deepak Chopra and how to deal with pain, emotional pain. Because one thing I hear a lot, and people have messaged me and asked me this question, they've said, okay, you talk about having to process your feelings. How do you do that? How do you do that? Of course, one way is the way that you respond to yourself, and I made up this VARY acronym, V-A-R-Y, stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure why for yourself. So when you're feeling something, you say, you know, yes, of course I'm feeling this way. Who wouldn't feel this way? This is what I'm feeling. There's a reason that I'm feeling this way. Anyone in my position would probably feel this way. Or even if they wouldn't, I feel this way and it is legitimate and I need to attend to my feeling. Reassuring, I won't always feel this way. I've been through tough things before. I can get through this. What are my strategies to like short-term and long-term to deal with what's going on? That is one way that you can respond to yourself when you're upset, other than heading to the kitchen or the drive-thru. So Deepak says, if we don't deal with pain when it occurs, it will resurface as insomnia, hostility, anger, fear, or anxiety. Or, from my perspective, eating your feelings, binging, or restricting, or doing something, focusing on food in some negative way. And Deepak gives a 7-step method to deal with these emotions. So he says, toxic, turbulent emotions have one cause, and that cause is not knowing how to deal with pain. He says, pain is normal in life, suffering isn't. And when we don't know how to deal with pain, how to respond to pain, how to make ourselves feel better, emotional pain, again, I'm talking about, when we don't know how to respond to our emotional pain, we suffer. When we do know how to respond to our emotional pain, we feel better. Now, Deepak is a big fan of meditation, as you probably know. I am not a big fan of meditation when you're first learning to deal with food issues. Here's why. It can put you in touch with feelings that you're eating to avoid. So meditation, unless it's guided meditation and you're listening to someone else's voice, I really like the Calm, the Calm app, but there are lots out there that are free. When you're listening to someone, when you're listening to a guided meditation, that's a little easier. But when you're just sort of alone with your own thoughts, that can make things worse for someone who struggles with food, because you know, you use food to get away from yourself. So when you're meditating, you're getting connected to yourself. It can backfire at first. The more that you learn to be with yourself, the easier it's going to get. But you got to do what's right for you. So if you want to try meditation, set aside a few minutes when you won't be disturbed. Pick any quiet place where you feel calm. Sit in a relaxed position and close your eyes. And for a few minutes, just be in silence and focus on your breathing. Deepak says, with your eyes closed, recall some time in the recent past that was upsetting to you, something that upset you recently. Maybe a time that you thought you were mistreated, may have been an argument with your partner or coworker, maybe a past injustice at work. Just identify some instance when you felt emotionally upset. And then for the next 30 seconds, think about that incident in detail. Try to picture what actually happened as vividly as you can, as if you were reporting it, like for the news or something. So what you're doing is you're becoming an observer to the event that upset you. So you're not the event, you're not the argument, you are not emotionally upset. You are witnessing what is happening from the perspective of your now meditating self. And he says, identify exactly what you're feeling. Put some word on the incident that you're thinking about that describes what you are feeling. Be as precise as you can. Do you feel unappreciated, insulted, treated unfairly? Give the feeling a name. Are you mad, sad, afraid, anxious? Come up with a word that epitomizes this painful experience, and then focus your attention on the word. So that's part one of the seven steps. Part two, he says, witness the experience. Gradually allow your attention to move away from the word that you just identified. Let your attention wander to your body. Become aware of physical sensations that arise in your body as a result of the emotion you've identified. So these are two elements. There's the idea in your mind and the physical sensation in your body. And that's what an emotion is, right? We can't think our feelings. We feel our feelings, which is a combination of having thoughts and a physical sensation. That's why we call it feeling something, right? Because we feel our emotions in our bodies. Let your attention pass through your body as you're recalling this experience. Locate the physical sensations the memory brings up. For some people, they say it's a pressure in their chest, or they feel a tightness in their throat, or they feel like their heart starts beating really fast, or maybe they get teary and they're, you know, start to cry. So find where it is in your body that you're feeling and holding the emotional experience. And the next part is a very important. Part three, express the emotion. Place your hand, here's how he says to do it. Place your hand on the part of your body where you sense the feeling is located. Say out loud, it hurts here. If you're aware of more than one location for this pain, move your hand from place to place. At every place where it hurts, where you feel the emotion in your physical body, pause for a moment and express what you're feeling. Say, it hurts here. When you experience physical discomfort, it means something is unbalanced physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Your body knows it. Every cell in your body knows it. Befriend these sensations. They're communicating to you. They're wise. The pain is actually leading you into awareness. Then, this is one of my favorites. He says, write out your feelings on paper. It's also a valuable way to express the emotion. Now, he has a little bit of a different slant on it, and I kind of love it, so I'm going to share it with you. So he says it's really effective to write out the experience in first person, second person, and finally from the perspective of a third person account. So what he's saying is essentially write out what happened from the perspective of first person, which is I. I went to say hi to my kid, and he told me, get out of here, Mom, I don't want to talk to you. And I felt really hurt and rejected. By the way, I just totally made that up. That did not happen to me. But I'm sure that in a few years it will. Because my kid is 11 going on like 16. It is so scary. So then you do it on second person. You went in to talk to your child and he said, get out of here, I don't want to talk to you. And you felt really, really rejected and hurt. Okay. And then third person, we'll use me. Nina went to talk to her child, opened the door, knocked on the door, opened it, and her kid said, hey, get out of here, Mom. I don't want anything to do with you. And Nina felt very rejected and hurt. So you do it from each of those perspectives, which is good, which is interesting. I've actually, you know, not heard that before, and I'm going to start using it. So thank you, Deepak. Fourth is take responsibility. Be aware. How are we doing? Be aware that any painful feelings you experience are your feelings. These feelings are happening inside your body now as you remember the pain, even though nothing is actually taking place in the world. It's already happened. You're only remembering what happened, yet your body is reacting with muscle contractions, hormonal secretions, and other responses within you. Even when the painful incident was happening, the effect was entirely within you. And you have a choice in how you interpret and respond to this emotional turbulence. Recognizing this choice is what he means by taking responsibility for your feelings. Recognizing your ability to respond to painful situations in new and creative ways. Taking responsibility for your feelings also gives you a sense of having the power to deal with this pain, to make this pain melt away. You know, it's not the situation that's the problem. It's the meaning of the situation to you, and it's your interpretation. For example, using my made up, you know, story, if someone went into their kid and they said, hey, how was your day? And their kid said, get out of here, Mom. I don't even want to talk to you. Don't darken my door. And that person was like, oh my God, my kid hates me. I'm a terrible mother. This is terrible. This is bad. Oh, I need ice cream, right? The interpretation would be, my kid hates me. I'm a bad mother. Those are interpretations. But if the interpretation was different, you know, go in, hey kid, how are you doing? Mom, I don't want to deal with you. Leave me alone. And the mom said, boy, someone's having a bad day. I'm going to leave him alone until he's ready to talk. Boy, it's hard to be a kid. I'm going to ask him later what's going on. Then the interpretation is, hey, it's not about you. You haven't been personally rejected. You know, yes, he rejected you, but that's not because you're rejectable. It means kid had a bad day. Right? So you can see how the interpretation of events has a huge impact then on how you feel. Because when you're saying kid had a bad day, you're not going to go eat ice cream and feel rejectable and rejected and bad and like a bad mom and all of that stuff. Next step, release the emotion. He says, pay attention to the part of your body where you're holding the pain. And with every breath, when you exhale, have the intention of releasing the tension, releasing the pain. So for the next 30 seconds, he says, takes 30 seconds and just feel the sensation of pain leaving your body with every breath. And some people find that making an audible tone that resonates in that part of your body where the pain is localized helps to loosen and lift the contraction away. Some people feel really stupid when they make an audible tone. So when I did Krav Maga for a while, you know, one of the things they tell you is you've got to exhale. And everyone's like, whew, whew, or like all kinds of sounds. And some people are just like, no, I can't do that. So you just do what makes you feel comfortable. He also says, hey, experiment to discover what works best for you. If you've written out your emotions on paper, it can be helpful to ritually burn the paper and offer the ashes to the winds. This is very similar to what I was talking about a few weeks ago when I said how to handle stress, let it rip. write down everything that's stressing you out, everything that's bothering you, and then instead of ritually burning it and offering it to the wind, which you could do. I mean, if that works for you, do that. Go for it. Whatever works for you. What works for me is ripping it up and flushing it. Flushing it down the toilet. So symbolic. Flushing away all your feelings. Flushing away all that bad, yucky guck. You put it on the paper. You rip it up. You flush it. Or burn it in a place where it is safe. But get rid of it. Get rid of it symbolically. It really does help. Deepak also says pain is essentially an opportunity for transformation. And that's true if, and this is a big if, if you can identify the thoughts and ideas that lead to the painful feeling. If your boss yells at you and your interpretation is that you're a terrible person and you're never going to get ahead in life and you're doomed and everything's terrible, you're stupid, you're not good enough, you're bad, you're going to feel terrible about yourself. But if your interpretation is your boss is blowing off steam, has nothing to do with your good enoughness, then that's a whole different story. It's a whole different feeling. Our interpretation of events, more than the actual events, are what cause the intensity of emotions. Remember, thoughts lead to feelings, which lead to behavior. If you just try to change the behavior through sheer willpower, nothing is ever going to change for good. It's not going to change permanently. But if you recognize the thought, oh, I feel bad about this situation, or this happened, it made me feel like I'm not a good enough person. It made me question my good enoughness, and that made me feel bad, and how I'm using food to cope with that bad feeling, let me question the idea that I'm not good enough, right? When you can have the idea of, you know what, I did this thing wrong, it doesn't mean I'm not good enough. It means I'm human. I make mistakes. Oh, well, I'm going to learn from it and do better next time. Then you don't feel bad. And then you're not using food for comfort because you don't need to comfort yourself. You already feel okay. If you think I'm a bad person, I have no willpower, I can't do anything right, I'm not good enough, or something along those lines, you're going to feel bad. And if you don't have a way to comfort and support yourself, which you cannot do if you're busy tearing yourself down for eating, you're going to eat. So it seems like a real catch-22, but the way out is to change your thoughts. Changing your thoughts leads to changing the way you feel, which leads to changing what you do. Of course, you also need to figure out how you came to think those mean thoughts in the first place. It is not enough just to try to change the thoughts. So, let's see, we have about 7 minutes. Really, guys, if you have anything to share with me, I would love to hear from you. This is your last chance. I have probably time for one call before we end the show. Again, the number is 818-602-4929. I'm going to talk about babying yourself, okay? So another way to take care of yourself is to baby yourself, but in a good way. Not that you're an infant and you're infantilized, but we give care to babies easily, right? And when new mothers, if you look at mothers, especially new mothers, when their babies cry, good moms try to figure out what's going on. What's happening with that baby? Is the baby tired? Is the baby hungry? Does the baby need a diaper change? Does the baby need to be held? What does the baby need? So wouldn't it be nice if you treated yourself with that same degree of interest and concern that you might show for a baby or for someone else, for your kids? Because people who struggle with food are often hostile to their most basic needs, whether they are for food, sleep, love, connection, or comfort. In fact, lots of people will say, well, I ate something with sugar because I needed to wake up. Well, here's the thing. If you're sleepy, The answer is not to eat something with sugar. The answer is to take a little nap, if possible, or just close your eyes and rest. So you're giving yourself the wrong thing. If you're feeding yourself sugar when you're tired, you're not giving yourself, you're not meeting your true needs. Now, a lot of times, people, why do people think of food to meet every need? Well, some parents, I should say, because it's not just mothers who feed their children, some parents use food to meet every single need. So if the baby cries, it doesn't matter if she's tired or hungry or wet or cranky, the response is the same, she gets fed. So imagine that from a baby's perspective. You're tired, you need a nap, and instead you get a bottle or a boob. You learn that your need for rest will be resolved with food. You may even start to confuse the need for rest with hunger. And if this happens all the time, you may even start feeling hungry when you are tired. And that's why it can get really confusing to try to, figure it out. You know, so hungry, angry, lonely, tired is another good thing to remember. So when you want food, and are you hungry? Are you emotionally hungry? Are you physically hungry? Are you angry or anxious? Are you feeling something that's uncomfortable? Are you lonely? Are you using food to fill a void? Or are you tired and you're using food to wake up? So if you're hungry, you might be physically hungry. You might be emotionally hungry. Sometimes all experience of yearning for love. We use it in our language, right? Hungry for love, starving for attention. Those are all ways in which we express the need for others as connected with food. So ask yourself, what am I really hungry for? Am I hungry for connection? Am I hungry for understanding, attention, relating? What's going on with me? And the more adept you get at this, the easier it's going to be. Quickly, the difference between physical and emotional hunger. When you're physically hungry, you feel it physically. You feel it in your body. You feel like maybe lightheaded, or your stomach is growling or gurgling, or you just feel that physical sensation of hunger. And when it gets intense enough, any food will do, right? If you're hungry, you're starving, you're going to eat something that maybe you don't even normally like because you're starving. When you are emotionally hungry, it's often because suddenly it's like a craving. Something sounds good. Something suddenly seems really good, and it feels like if you eat it, you're going to feel better emotionally. That's emotional hunger. And so the more that you can differentiate between them, and even if you feel a little physically hungry, if there's an emotional component to it, meet the emotional need first. Get used to meeting your true yearning with what you really need. And as with everything, practice makes perfect. Practice makes perfect. Okay, so that is all I've got for you guys today. I'm going to end the show just a little bit early. I'm so glad that you were here joining me on LA Talk Radio, on the Dr. Nina Show. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific. If you'd like more food for thought, check out my website, drninainc.com. Follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dr. Nina Inc. And be sure to sign up on my website for my free guides and giveaways, so you'll be the first to know about all the exciting things I have coming up this year, and also so that you get access to all the free things that I give away very often, because I am here to help. And remember to be curious, not critical, because when you're curious about what you're doing, you're more likely to find answers. When you're critical, you're just going to feel bad. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.